This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Finances are so bad at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale that the university is looking for retirees to volunteer as unpaid adjunct professors and lecturers. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz says he doesn't really want to address Southern's problems, but in this interview with GLT's Charlie Schlenker, Dietz does talk about how ISU uses retirees.
For us, it's not really unusual for us to, at the departmental level, to have some retirees or some other individuals who have the academic credentials to volunteer to serve on a committee as a community person, or maybe even a volunteer in some kind of a mentoring kind of way. But we don't replace faculty activity with people that have retired. But a lot of institutions have extern programs where students will work with individuals who perhaps are alums and given fields and so forth. But teaching full-blown courses, that's reserved here for our faculty, whether it's tenured faculty or tenure track faculty. So we tend not to do that in terms of our actual coursework.
There are retirees who serve as lecturers on a contract basis, and the university gets the benefit of having an experienced educator, highly credentialed person who's going to be good for students at a lecturer's rate.
Right.
But are you aware of anywhere else that this has been done?
Not to my knowledge. My sense in just reading the article is that perhaps some of the wording in the article, has created a bit of anxiety and questions. And so when you use the word adjunct, it means some things to some people and others to others. But I'll say here that we've been very respectful and supportive of the role that our regular faculty play, obviously, in the academic enterprise here. But, based upon judgments in departments, there are times that retirees have come in and mainly it's more guest lecturing than, actually giving a full-blown course. A lot of our folks, after they retire, they want to retire. But there have been instances where the department, has a need that a particular person can fill, but that would not be our normal practice.
Is it a good idea to use retirees, even on a contract basis, too much?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a good idea. I think retirees obviously have, tremendous experience behind them. They've got, if they have the proper academic credentialing, which they would have, or they would have been allowed to do what they did for us on a regular basis. But I think, when you begin to drift from folks that are engaged in the enterprise on a daily basis, that unless, the individual keeps up on the knowledge base and then the ever-changing knowledge base in a given discipline, we would use them sparingly.
Yeah, I probably should have said a lot rather than too much. But the question arises, perhaps, is it likely that by using retirees as lecturers, you sort of deteriorate the institution's ability to form the farm team, the people who may eventually become tenure track, who are hired as a starting adjunct or a starting lecturer?
Sure. Well, I think the core of any academic enterprise and any good faculty or folks that are here full time, some may choose to be here part time. Some of our non tenure track folks are not full time faculty, but I think the core of the faculty are people who are here day in and day out doing their good work of teaching, research, and service. I do think there are times that retirees and can be used in a very specific role, but they, to me that determination really needs to be made at the departmental level, and it's really between the department and the former employee. But the real work of the institution, the real academic work, in my estimation, really needs to be the within the purview of the individuals who are here on a employment basis.
This takes us by extension to the ratio of tenure track to non-tenure track faculty. And you recently testified to House lawmakers in an appropriations hearing that you're pretty happy with that ratio. What is it? And what's the trend for ISU?
Well, I would say, a broader comment, the trend nationwide for many institutions is a reduction of the tenure-track faculty and a movement of some of those lions into more flexible positions of instructors or adjuncts. We've talked about that term a little bit. That has not been our trend. A lot of institutions have done that to help them gain budget flexibility, which it does. But in my estimation, we keep a very close line on what our numbers are, and our numbers of tenure track vis-a-vis non-tenure track have not changed much over time. Academic Senate helps keep an eye on that. I meet with the chair of the Academic Senate on a regular basis. Our provost keeps an eye on that. All the deans keep an eye on that. And we've have not gone down that road that other institutions have. And I think as a result of that, that we have a solid academic programs taught by highly competent faculty. And any change to that that ratio right now, I certainly would be opposed unless something really drastic happened on the budget side. And we've had drastic things that have happened on the budget side the last several years, but we've resisted that notion of changing that balance.
What is the balance? About 50-50 right now? Or?
I'd have to check my data on that. I think that's pretty close to that, but I wouldn't give you an exact number without checking some data.
And what are the trade-offs? Obviously, as you mentioned, financial, but why have even 50% non-tenure track? What's the benefit of that?
Well, I think, a tenured faculty arrive at the point of their discipline at a different level with different kinds of rigor, typically have the terminal degree and, have gone through the tenure process. Some non-tenure track faculty are equally talented, but some have not gone through that tenure process. And so I think it's important that whatever you're offering in terms of academic program, that you have the highest quality faculty that you can get, which is basically the most experienced and the most credentialed folks that you can get. And so I think, the strength of the brand of Illinois State University is really through the academic programs and through the faculty. And I think, students continue to vote with their feet to come here because we have terrific programs. We also have a terrific staff that service students while they're here. But I think, the strength of the program gets back to that balance and having a strong balance. I'm not aware of any institution in the country that has all tenured professors teaching, and part of that is the dynamic of hiring people to teach courses that sometimes students sign up for late, and so sometimes your tenured faculty are not available for that. So there's always going to be a demand for filling in some with a non-tenure track faculty.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker with Illinois State University President Larry Dietz. In your testimony to the House Higher Ed Appropriation Committee recently, you remarked on the idea that ISU is supported less than any other public university in the state of Illinois by the state on a per-student basis. That suggests the idea of a school funding formula for higher education, much as there is one for K-12. Where is that idea in policy discussion now?
I think non-existent. I wish it was being bandied about more, but it also presumes that there was a funding formula that once did exist, and perhaps we've gotten away from that. And I've not been able to find any evidence that there was ever a funding formula for higher education. I think what we have is an artifact of the way institutions were decades ago, and where they were awarded X amount of appropriations based upon a political process. Then, since that time, it's been really decremental. I wouldn't normally say incremental or decremental. Well, we haven't really had any increases, so it's really been decreases in that funding. The dynamic that's really impacted this per-student ratio in the last, 10 years, and probably even more dramatically in the last five, has been the decline, and in some cases, a steep decline in enrollment at some of the other public universities. They've held their relative position relative to the per student appropriation, but as the enrollment has gone down, that number has gone up for them and gone down for us. So we're educating more students. We're educating more Illinois students and percentage-wise than any other public university in the state. We're doing a great job at retention and graduation. We're in the top 10% in the nation with that. And we get the lowest per-student appropriation by far. But part of that's been the function of the decline of the enrollment of the other institutions and the increase in ours. So in essence, it results in us being penalized for doing a really good job. I've asked the legislators to take a look at that. And the ones that I've talked to, I think, have agreed that there needs to be an examination, but I've seen no movement in that direction.
Well, that kind of conversation was decades in the making for K-12.
Right.
Does higher ed have decades more?
Well, I would hope
before
so.
before it has to be a real part of the conversation.
Yeah, I would hope so. Representative Brady had introduced a bill along with colleague Senator Rose that looked at performance funding as one way to potentially address that. And that is one way to address it. And I think most performance funding models, Illinois State would come out in really good shape on that. But I think we're really talking about the kind of energy that went into the elementary secondary reformulation that Senator Berrigman really led and taking a very close look at that. I think, you know, a lot of the other institutions would say, well, if Illinois State moves up, then our appropriation will move down, and we're already struggling to make ends meet as it is, which might be true. But that also presumes that, you know, the pie is only one size and that all the slices will have to be redistributed for that to occur. So I'm not expecting that my colleagues across the state will jump up and down and say, sure, take a larger portion of my slice of the pie. There needs to be something done, in my estimation, because that differential, as we've looked at that differential, even if we were looking at the median part of appropriation, that results in essentially a new College of Fine Arts building, and that's about $54 million every year, just to bring us up to where we ought to be. So, and that would almost double our appropriation. So think of the things that we could do in terms of deferred maintenance, in terms of scholarships, grants for students, faculty development, and the list goes on.
One of the difficulties in passing a new funding formula for K-12 was the notion that if you just have this flat amount per student, it's going to penalize some poorer school districts. They got around that by having supplemental amounts based on various criteria of the percentage of low-income students, right, the percentage of special needs students, that sort of thing. And there was a hold harmless clause, at least for the first few years, which would protect school districts who would stand to lose under the new formula, that their funding would never actually go down. Right. It may not go up as fast as other districts who have a better case for need. Is that sort of splitting the baby likely to happen in the General Assembly for higher ed, or will it be a performance-based model?
Well, there's always, I shouldn't say always, in recent history, there's been funding for a performance-based model. But it's only been 0.5%.
Yeah, it's been nibbling around the edges, right, and more of a pilot case than,
right,
than anything.
Right. But I think, you know, if there was some whole harmless language that would create or avoid a disaster for some other public institutions, I think that would be worthwhile. But there has to be some incentives, in my estimation, built in for institutions that really are meeting the state needs and doing so in a way that's somewhat fair on the funding.
There has been discussion of the potential need to close one or two public campuses in the state of Illinois. And, of course, nobody is willing to talk about which ones out loud in a very loud voice.
Right, right.
Would this approach, performance-based funding or a school funding formula, if that approach comes forward over time, reduce or eliminate the need for that, or is that still going to be in the conversation?
I think it's only in the conversation with some individuals. The bottom line is that if you closed any of the public universities in the state right now, particularly those that are outside of the city of Chicago, you would essentially close down those communities. And they're still going to the state would still have an obligation for those facilities in those communities. So I'm not a proponent of that. But I do think, and I've talked to some elected officials as recently as this week, I was in Springfield talking with the speaker and President Cullerton and Leader Durkin and Senator Brady. And then on Monday, I go back down and talk with Governor Rauner. And we're really trying to make a case for FY19 and saying essentially that we need a reasonable budget, but we need it for a full year to rebuild the confidence in education in the state of Illinois. And that will help us whenever we have a budget. A lot of us have done a lot of things to shore up enrollment with new strategies for this next year, and we're doing fine as a university for next year in terms of our numbers. But nevertheless, not having a budget creates a crisis of confidence in the very individuals who are sitting as students. So one of the things that I've been talking about is that they really need to take a look at the MAP program and fund that in a much better way. That will keep some students in Illinois, and it'll allow some other students to go to school who might not be doing that. Currently, the funding for the MAP program only covers 41% of all the students in Illinois who are eligible for that, and it's strictly a funding issue. If that number came up somewhat, that would help all institutions rise with their enrollments, which will help them with their financial models at those institutions.
Is MAP money part of the per student FTE state funding?
No. Okay. No.
If you include MAP money, does that help and make ISU look better as a total a recipient of state funds?
Not really. I don't think we would change a lot with that. Some of the students that are going to some of the schools in Chicago are place bound. They don't have the money to go another place, or they're working, or they're non-traditional student and they have families to support there. So I think they would benefit more than an Illinois state would. But I do know from...
ISU has very healthy enrollment, though, so right. It would benefit from an increase in MAP.
Well, sure, because there would be some individuals who would come here and it would help them with their enrollment. The other thing that's being suggested now is that most of the other states around us that are attracting students out of Illinois to go to their states have, in addition to a MAP program, they have a merit scholarship program for students who may not qualify on a need basis, but have intellectual capacity that some of the other states want. So there's also talk of offering a possibility of retaining some of those students with a merit-based program that would be in addition to the current MAP dollars. So I think tinkering around with the amount of money that students can be given to help with their pursuit of an education will keep more students in Illinois.
Even if you do get a full-year budget out of Springfield, which, according to several lawmakers, actually seems likely because it's an election year and they don't want to tick off voters any more than they're already angered by the previous 2 years of a lack of a budget. Even if you get that, are we talking dollar amounts with an increase in MAP money or an increase in merit aid among campuses that are more than marginal?
Well, the university presidents, our request that we had submitted would have been going back to FY15 as a budget year. The Illinois Board of Higher Education also submitted a budget request, and there's a little bit of difference between their request and the university's request, but frankly, not enough to make a huge negative difference in our operations. So both IBHE and all the university presidents, we strongly agree that bottom line is that we need a budget. We need a full year budget with a reasonable appropriation, and that we can't continue these major cuts that we experienced in 16 and 17. You know, in 18 was a decent budget year, but we need a budget. We need a full-year budget, and we need one that's reasonable, dependable, and will enhance confidence in the individuals who send their sons and daughters to our institutions.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker, talking with Illinois State University President Larry Dietz. Let me take one more bite at the apple of the idea of closing a campus or two, a public campus or two in Illinois. I understand your reluctance to throw one of your colleagues under the bus, but people are already voting with their feet in the state of Illinois, and a number of institutions have had huge decreases in enrollment. Southern has closed its equivalent of Waterson Towers. Eastern has closed a big dorm complex as well. Edwardsville is okay, but still down some. ISU is doing fine on enrollment, but isn't there going to be some place that will eventually fall below a critical mass of students needed to keep the place open?
I think it's a very legitimate public policy question. I think people struggle with knowing what that tipping point is. I've had our Center for Policy Studies here on the campus in the College of Education really is not original research, but it's really a literature review, if you will, about what's happened in other states. And I've shared that around some, and there's really three sections of that relatively brief paper. It's about 8 pages, but about 5 of those pages is entitled What Has Been Tried in Other States and Hasn't Worked. There's about a page and a half of what has been tried and does work, and then there's about a page and a half of what is our hope for the future. And the bottom line is that the idea about program elimination and not allowing for duplication of academic programs, of going to one board, versus individual institutional boards, performance funding, guaranteed tuition, all of these kinds of things are really tinkering around the edge. And it has shown time after time in other states that the institution, the states that have pursued those things, that they don't work. It's just really not about the basis of what does work. What does work is stable, reliable funding, appropriate funding, and investments in student aid programs that will allow students to choose the institution that they want to go to, and that will help with the enrollment. So it gets back to the enrollment piece, and the fact that we've got 41% of our students who qualify for MAP that don't get it because of lack of funding. Those students, if it was even funded at 80%, that's a lot of students that would be going somewhere, and it might help. It would certainly would help us some, but it might help these other institutions greatly.
Illinois State University President Larry Dietz spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. ISU's Board of Trustees will take up tuition rate recommendations next week. Hear more from President Dietz about international student enrollment and the study of an engineering program tomorrow on GLT's Sound Ideas.